We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Check out the Geek Nation Tours New York Comic Con package, combining all the excitement of the convention with a tour of the city and the coolest sights for the superhero fan. You'll recognize locations from films and books and visit geek culture sites like Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Welcome to the Get Your Comic Published or Die Trying panel. I'm Brett Monroe. I'm the host of We Talk Comics. We're a podcast. And next to me, I got Alexander Finbo. He's the publisher of
Renegade Arts and Entertainment.
Renegade Arts and Entertainment.
Three.
And then right next to him, I've got the amazing Riley Rossbow. Riley, what are you doing the art on right now?
Hellblazer.
Hellblazer.
And
yes.
Dusky.
There you go. And at the end, I have Jim Zub, and of course from Wayward Skull Kickers and Samurai Jack.
Yeah. Sweet.
Awesome.
So, give it up for you guys. Saturday at Comic Con. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so I'm going to ask a few questions just to start off. So the first question that I would ask is, so now somebody gave me the piece of advice that you don't want to start with your favorite piece, that you would kind of want to start with something that maybe you're not quite as jazzed about, just to kind of get the bugs worked out. So what do you guys think of that? We'll start with Jim.
I mean, you've got to love whatever you're working on. I do think it's smart to start small, because a lot of times you want to do something epic, you want to do something really big, and I get that coming out of the gate, but you also want to do something achievable. So doing a short story, figuring out the form, it's sort of like if you were going to say to people, hey, I think I'm going to start jogging this week because I want to exercise, and then you said, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to do a 5K, you know, because I got to get going. And so you've literally never run before, and you're going out to the store buying shoes and then trying to do a marathon. And I feel like when people do creative endeavors, they don't think of it that way. They don't really look at it in sort of achievable goals and building up their skills. If you were going to run a 5K, you got to do a quick jog. You got to do a little sprint. You got to exercise. You got to learn your craft, your creative craft, get better at it bit by bit. And then eventually you'll be able to do the big, you know, the big stories, the big push, the more epic and intricate kind of crazy stuff.
I think you just got to make stuff and know when to quit. But nothing. I don't think anything you make shouldn't be precious. To me, anyways. I just make stuff, and if that doesn't work, just make the next thing.
But you learn from it.
I learn from it. Yeah, I wouldn't hold anything back. I think you should just go 1,000,000% all the time, and then it fails, and it's a disaster, and then you do the next thing. And it's just, you just do it. And if nothing has to be precious. And if something gets stuck and nobody's buying it, nobody likes it, don't just keep doing it. Just do your next awesome thing, because the next thing's better. It's just always better.
Yeah, that's good advice. With my publisher hat on, because I'm also a writer, I think you should try doing some stuff, whether you're a writer or an artist, and get yourself to a level before you bring stuff to me that holds up professionally, that shows that you know how to tell a story, either in a script or with your artwork. There are some fantastic artists out there who haven't really learned how to tell a story with panels. And for the artists that really can bring their A-game art, and I can see very quickly with their sample artwork that they can tell a story, then I'm instantly interested. So yeah, start doing stuff, but don't bring it to me until you've got to a level where you really think I'm going to pay attention to it, because I see a lot of pitches. How many writers are there in the room? And how many artists?
How many writer artists? Yeah.
Excellent.
You can see the market is a little top-heavy there in terms of the writing. So a lot of times there are a lot more people who want to tell stories than there are people who can capably draw them. It is definitely a buyer's market as far as the artist is concerned. And so you've got to make sure that your stuff's going to stand out, that you're going to have something really, you know, special. Either you're bringing a name and a you know, an ability that people know about, or a brand, or you've got a story that's really going to jump out and grab people.
Yeah, I agree. Have any of you been to Jim's website and read his blog on getting into comics?
So if you go to, I guess I'm tooting my horn here. If you go to jimzub.com, so J-I-M-Z-U-B, I almost said Z-U-B, I'm so used to American shows. I am Canadian though. J-I-M-Z-U-B.com, I've got like a whole host of tutorials about how to pitch your ideas, how to write scripts, marketing your concepts, some of the economics of the business, and you might find them useful in terms of breaking things down into bite-sized pieces that hopefully will help you dig in on your work. So,
well, yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll toot your horn because they're fantastic.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
And they're really engaging, so you do a great job with them.
Yeah, I heartily recommend reading Jim's website. There's very few people working in the industry that are very honest with how it works and how the relationship work and how the money works. And Jim's one of the guys that just lays it out as it is. So heartily recommend it.
All right, so now all of you have had those moments. You've all published your own books. Now, if you could go back and kind of had it to do over again, what is that thing that you would change about how you did it? Alex, why don't you start?
Oh, wow. There's nothing I'd really change. I've learned. I'm a movie guy. I'm from a movie background, and I've only been in publishing for comics for 8 years, so I've had to learn on my feet. Every time I work with an artist or a writer, I learn something, and I go, oh, I wish I'd known that 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Every time I go to a convention and I talk to other publishers, and they tell me stuff, and they're like, why are you doing it like that? You know you should do it like this. It's like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. Now someone's showing me how to do it. But I wouldn't change any of the mistakes I've made, because it's made me a much better publisher and editor. Yeah, that's probably a good answer. I won't go into anything else.
Riley?
I would quit stuff sooner.
Hold on to the bitter end.
Speaking of what your initial question is, that sometimes, but if I didn't stick with stuff that was failing, sometimes I wouldn't be where I am. But you know, you need to know when to call it quits and do something new.
Is there one in particular that comes to mind?
Well, my first ongoing series, we did 34 issues of. And maybe we should have done 12. But it established, I mean, the silver lining is that it established that I could do an ongoing book on time.
And that is really the thing. I think a lot of that is that kind of attitude where you realize even your mistakes or even the things you've gone in with. I think one of the things I probably, it's not that I would even do differently, I just wish I was aware. Two things, I guess. So networking. People assume that networking is like walking into a room, finding the most powerful person in that room, and like becoming their friend or like bribing them, or I don't know. I think you're just going to walk in and be like, hey, there's Stan Lee. You're just going to warp over to him, and all of a sudden he's going to offer you a job. Stan Lee won't offer you a job. But
you've tried.
Really about sort of understanding that you're boxing at a certain weight class, that when you start in this business, you're going to be dealing with people that are doing the same kinds of things you are. And yes, you might meet other people in the industry, but the way one of my friends put it is like, you know, it is like a ladder, and you can maybe reach one rung up and you can reach one rung down, and those are the people you're going to be interacting with on the most regular basis. Sure, you might see someone up there and they might wave to you every so often, but they're not just going to look down and go, hey, why don't you come 30, you know, up here instantaneously. You're going to have to climb up, or you're going to have to help someone one up at a time, because that's really your access. That's what you've kind of got. And people, I think they flub that, or they sort of assume, well, I'll just go to the editor at Marvel and tell them why I like Wolverine. Like, well, have you ever published a book before? No. Like, if you walked into a restaurant and you said, hey, I want to be your head chef. And they're like, have you ever cooked? And you went, I love the Cooking Channel, and the Food Network's my favorite, and I go to the websites all the time. And they're like, well, okay, but that doesn't really show us that you can cook. No, but this is my dream. Yes, and also the dream of the people who actually went and did the due diligence and learned how to cook and went to school and became a sous chef and worked at it in the kitchen for years, and then at one point were offered, hey, do you want to run the kitchen? Do you know what I mean? It's not just about you. It's about process and that sort of stuff. And not to take up too much airspace, but the second thing I think it would change is also knowing that your life, yes, decisions are important that you're going to make, but you will not just have one chance in your entire life to pitch or to get a book done. And if something doesn't work out, or your first project doesn't work, or that it's okay, you can keep making stuff and it will be all right. You can do the next thing and it is not the end of the world. I think your first big failure, it feels like this will never happen. My life will throw it in. it's all over. And then once you've had a few of those punch-ups, sort of egotistically speaking, you sort of realize, oh, this is the long game, and I'm just going to keep rolling. And so knowing that that's okay, even screwing up an interaction with a professional, you don't want to do that. It's not something you plan to do. But if it happens, you're like, you will continue. It will be okay.
Yeah. So Alex, sorry.
In those interactions too, I think it's important to be genuine.
Yeah,
I think that sometimes people are under the impression if, like you said, if you can woo everybody at dinner, that then they're going to give you
JLA.
They'll be like, oh, sure, you're Justice League because you bought us drinks.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I always try and be. If someone looked at my blog or they look at my Twitter, I'm a pretty positive person. It's not that I'm not a negative person, but that is not what I put forward.
Yeah.
If I get angry, I get frustrated just like anyone else. The difference is I'm not going to put it on the megaphone and get on the mountain and tell everyone about why they suck or what sucks. I'm going to try, that's when I call up a friend and we have a private, my good friend Ray Fox, he's a writer at DC, does all sorts of stuff, and we have what we call like our venom bucket. So you go up for a beer and you just like fill a bucket with anger. Oh, why isn't the world doing what I want it to do? And then we're like, whew, that feels real good. Let's go back online and tell people
how great things are.
Things are good, because you got to get that out of this. Everyone's afraid. Everyone's nervous. Everyone wants more and wants it faster. And we're no different. Don't think that just because you've been published that all of a sudden it's easy street. You know what I mean? There's always going to be difficulties, and that's okay. But just understand that look at it from the outside. If someone looked at your Twitter feed or your Facebook for the first time and all they saw was your rage and your frustration and your ego, and then you go, maybe I wouldn't hire that person. Maybe that person scares me.
Yeah. But I should just add, if you did want to pitch or talk to us and you did bring drinks, that would probably help start the conversation better.
Won't take a bribe.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to someone to buy me a drink and then give me a pitch, especially on the con floor. If you can get beer into the convention, that would be good.
Or you should just break the rules. Just great. Get kicked right out of the show.
Yeah, as long as you give me a drink first.
He wants a beer.
So, Alex, you're an editor as well, and one of the things that I think I would view as important is the having an editor, especially like people seeing your
Image Comics.
I know you don't specifically have
that. Oh, I know.
But who is it that should be reading your book in the absence of editors then?
No. My wife is a prose writer, and she reads all my. She's also got a real dry sense of humor. So if I can break through that shell, I know I've done something funny. She tends to be very honestly. At first, I think we were both worried about reading each other's stuff, but we're actually really, really honest with each other. Almost more honest, I think, than outside people would be. Because I know that she's saying it for the right reasons. She doesn't need to impress me. I don't need to impress her. We're locked in. It's good. But, so if she tells me there's a problem with the story, here's one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was, someone tells you there's a problem with the story, they're probably right. If they tell you how to fix it, they're probably wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Think that, you can solve your story problems, but you may need to be notified about that there is a problem. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
My wife is also my editor on my image stuff, and she does this. It drives me crazy. So this is the page, right? I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? And she comes over. It's okay. And walks away. And that's the test. If she says it's okay and walks away, I got to fix something.
That's pure love right there.
It is. And then I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, it's just, I don't know. It's fine. That's it. That's the whole conversation.
Wow. That's amazing.
You gotta love
this. Yeah, I'm really bad. I would send my wife a script, and then she's downstairs in her little study working, and I just start pacing because I want to hear a titter through the door, or I want to hear one of these little some emotional outburst comes out, or kind of like a oh no way, and I'm like because art is about you want to emotionally connect with people, and if you can get them to the point where they're physically making a sound, hopefully it's not a a good sound, then you've done something. Yeah.
But not the sound of the shredder.
Yeah. Oh Jesus, that's not the sound.
Like, my background is a screenwriter and a director, so that's my training for comics. And then when we started doing comics, it's because I did a movie with Alan Grant, the writer. Any of you guys have heard of him?
Yeah.
So he was my mentor as an editor when we started Renegade. And he's a very patient and understanding man. And then I had to edit his scripts, and that was a nerve-wracking, terrifying experience. Because how do you, like, edit someone who's been doing this for 30 years at the top of their game? I mean, if you've read his Batman stuff, then, you know, so much of it is just... You wouldn't think an editor needed to do anything.
But by the same token, I think what's really great is just getting an outside perspective. It's not even so much about that you're not capable with, just because someone gives you comments. I think it's just you're so close to the material that someone just looking at it with a fresh eye. Even if they ask you a question and then you explain it, so they're like, I don't know why this happened in the story. And then you're like, well, it's for this and that. Oh, that wasn't very clear, was it? Oh, fuck. And then you just go back and, you know, make it clearer, make the adjustments or things like that. So I think sometimes it's not even about editing, like telling you what to do, so much as it is about giving me a fresh voice and a fresh pair of eyes on it.
Oh, I tell everybody what to do now. Yeah. Now I'm a seasoned editor. I'm like, this is bullshit. Change it. not really. I try and get out of the way as much as possible. And I've had a lot of luck working with fantastic writers. But if something just sticks out like a sore thumb in a script, something's not working,
sure,
then I will tell the writer. This point you lose me, and you know, I know this project from, and I'm trying to be objective, but this isn't working, and this character's not quite working, or whatever it is, and then leave them to figure it out. And if the writer wants me to as part of that process, then I will do it. But if they want to figure it out themselves, that's fine. And same with the art, the thumbnail stage. If I can follow the flow of it, then I'll leave the artist to get on with it. And some artists, you don't need to do anything, and it's a dream. And people are like, "Oh, you edited this? Wow, it must have been a great experience." I'm like, so great, didn't have to do a single thing. Pages came in, I was like, here you go, there's a check, brilliant, carry on.
Yeah. And other times, like, the sausage is made and all the bits and pieces come together and the lips and assholes, and you're just like, oh god, trying to make this thing work, and behind the scenes the curtain is a furious terrifying, and then the book comes out and everyone's smiling, yeah, look what we made, it's all good,
and it was only 4 years
little late. Twitching vein in the top of your head. It's good.
So the what is, well, first I'll start with you, Jim.
Sure.
What's the biggest hurdle for a young writer trying to get, you know, like, because we all know that when you do this, there's going to become a moment where you're going to hit the wall.
Yeah.
And then how do you break through that wall as a writer?
Sort of two sort of things, I guess, kind of related to that first point you made about, you know, the first thing you do is going to suck, or the first thing you do is going to be, I think a lot of people, they want to get into writing or telling stories because they were inspired by something, and they're locked into wanting to do that thing because they think that, because they want to be associated with something that inspired them. So I'll give you an example, like, if they love, I used to get all these people talk about, you know, Blade Runner, and they'd be like, oh, I want to, so it's a story, it's like a world like Blade Runner. And I'm like, okay, there is already Blade Runner. And then you'd be like, no, it's like that, but like, more, you know, oh, fuck, you know, and so, because they just want to be, they just want to make Blade Runner. And that's great, man. Blade Runner is amazing. And it exists. And we all love it, right? It's perfect. And so, the tough thing is breaking past that point where you're no longer just wearing your heart on your sleeve, and when you're sort of saying, what do I as an individual have to contribute in terms of a story or a theme? What am I saying that I haven't seen before? Or what can I bring as my perspective on life or relationships or the human condition? I know that sounds really aspirational and frou-frou, but like, what can I say rather than just the veneer of the trappings of the thing that I like? So when, you know, I see someone and they're like, they clearly love anime, and anime is amazing, and I love manga and all that stuff, but they're just stapling together a couple different things from their favorite stories, and it is the hollow outer shell of those things, and they're working really hard, but there's nothing underneath. It's just the trappings of the thing. And you're like, but what's it about? No, the guy has angel wings. You're like, yeah, no, I know. And the sword is of demon blood. No, I get it. But like, why do we give a fuck about any of this?
Yeah.
Because burning fire, you know. And that's the toughest hurdle for a lot of people to break through, I think, is understanding that stories are about big things, or they're about ideas. They're not just about the outer trappings of the thing. And when you first realize you haven't been doing that, you want to quit and burn everything you ever did, because you realize you weren't actually telling stories. You were just making Frankenstein monsters, you know what I mean? And not in a good way. And breaking through to that other side and going, I'm going to tell a story about a thing, and even if I fuck it up, it means something. that's genuine and that has the potential to stick around, that's the toughest thing I find for a lot of people to get to.
Now, how about you, Riley? Like, from an artist's perspective, then, because we, again, the wall.
Like, to getting something published?
Well, no, but like, was there a point where you just decided, I can't do this anymore?
No.
You
kind of have to be a little, like, deluded.
Deluded at all?
No, you do. You do a little bit, really, because you have to think, like, burning angel wings.
It's awesome.
Yes.
No one's ever done that
before. Nobody's ever thought of Blade Runner 2.
I think you have to be deluded to actually want to work in comics.
You do. Comics are like, it's a grind, but it's kind of the same thing that a lot of people get fascinated with the imagery, more the finish, the veneer, mm-hmm. than what's underneath. And if you can tell a story,
get under the hood.
That's the most important thing, is that everybody thinks it's all the cross-hatching, like Scott Williams cross-hatching, that's special, and it's not. It's all the under, like the structure, everything underneath, and the storytelling. And then if you can build up a structure, you'll learn the veneer. You'll learn to make it look fancy. That comes later. You just need to do the storytelling and do the work. And mostly do the work too. There's lots of people like, I really want to draw comics. I'm like, well, how many comics have you drawn? And they're like, 6 pages.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, after you do, 20 pages, then you can start talking about it. And after you do 1,000, you can worry about what your finish is. But until you do 1,000 pages, I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really know anything until you do 1,000 pages.
Edwin, the artist I work with on Skullkickers, I hired him out of school. He was in his graduating year at New York College of Art.
SVA?
Academy.
I think he went to SVA.
SVA. And so they, he was great. You know, his skills as an artist were really good, but his storytelling wasn't as strong. And so I was vicious. His first few pages came in, and before I was a writer, I was an art director, and I worked in animation as an artist. And so I would just tell him, look, we're doing a comedy book. Clarity is everything. People won't laugh if they don't know what is happening. And I grant that it was like art student mentality. They would make it harder on themselves because they wanted to show you that they could do it. And I was like, no, this isn't a 3-point perspective shot.
It's just
dead on, simple comedy. Let's do it. And he's like, well, that's easy. I'm like, then draw it faster. So we got a fucking deadline. Let's do this.
True, yeah.
And so about 2 issues of that where I just hammered at him, and I don't know if he hated me. And then all of a sudden it just like snapped, and he went, it's clarity. Yep.
Yeah.
Just drop that background out on that moment, or now we're establishing. And then every so often I'd give them these big, juicy, crazy scenes, and I'd go, just indulge. Like, all those are things you want to do. Go to town. And now his storytelling is rock solid. You know, we got 32 issues under our belt. And after the first two, he got it, you know.
Yeah, it's like 600 pages or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's a couple pages, yeah. That's crazy.
Clarity of storytelling is one of my favorite phrases. Now, if you pitch me something, and you've got some stuff, and I'm having to like work out how the story works, and I have to spend more than 5 seconds on each page, and you probably
like
just
confusing rendering. It's like icing on a turd.
Yeah, beautiful artwork that doesn't
amazing icing on a turd.
Amazing. You have to spend every blade of grass, and I'm like, this panel sucks. And the look at all the every dot. And you're just like,
yeah.
So now, is there anybody out here who would consider? I mean, you publish your own comic books, but would you ever decide to run your own publishing company? And I know somebody right here who's...
That's brave.
It's a good way to lose money.
Yeah. Both of you.
Right? So, I mean, I was the number two guy at Udon for 9 years, and Udon was split into two different halves. There was creative services, so we were doing commercial artwork for clients, like movie concept art and commercial art, and then there was publishing. So I wasn't really, I was running the creative arts half rather than the publishing half. But I guess that's how I learned a ton about the industry, was just watching, and in some cases just us fucking it up. Because you just, new mistakes. Probably one of the scariest things we ever had was we had a book finish and go off to press, and it had the wrong barcode on the back. And so the distributor, the first one comes in and they scan it to put them in the warehouse, and a totally different product code comes up because we just copied. Someone had temped in the barcode from an earlier book and forgot to replace it. And they print it. They're in the stores and they're like, well, we're going to have to literally reprint the whole book, or we can get someone in the warehouse to rip all the shrink wrap, sticker them, and then re-shrink wrap them all. And we were like, that one. And so it'll be cheaper if you guys drive down to the warehouse and help us.
Oh, like, dude.
Okay. You know, and these are the things that you will never make that mistake ever again. You'll check that barcode 40 fucking times from now on. But you never knew you could make that mistake until you made it, you know.
And working at Image, we've done stuff like that before. Yeah. I've had comics come out with, like, missing the price on the cover.
It's free.
Yeah. The first comic that we put out was Channel Evil by Alan Grant and Shane Oakley. And we did a co-publishing deal with Berserk Comics based in Ireland. They're not publishing much anymore, because Ryan and Andy Brown are very successful comic creators themselves, and they're just busy with their comic stuff. And the publishing side of it almost killed them. But I learned on that one in my first position as publisher, taken over from Alan because he had some health problems, so he stepped down from running the company, the publishing side of it, and I had to take over. So I worked with these guys, and we got the first issue done, and it was all great. And then Shane got ill just as the first issue went to press, and he couldn't work on the comic for almost 2 fucking years. And his style of artwork is so distinctive that I didn't want to bring another artist in to do it. And it's a 4-issue miniseries that 2 years between the first and the second issue.
That's the momentum killer right there. That's rough. Yeah.
So I learned not to put a comic out until you've got 90% of it in the can. Right. I guarantee that they're going to finish it. So when you say, what, 34, 36 issues without a break, instantly I'm like, I want to work with this guy. Yeah. I already seen his stuff. I know he can tell a story.
Yeah. It was funny.
It's great artwork, but he's dependable.
Yeah, with Skull Kickers, we had the same thing. So Chris Stevens and I did the original Skull Kickers short stories that were in the Pop Gun anthology for Image. And Chris is an absolutely brilliant artist. He's also he doesn't do the deadline thing very well. Beautiful, wonderful, incredible artwork. And Image asked us to do the book. And almost instantly I realized this was not going to happen because of his, the delivery was up and down. And then he also had a bunch of personal stuff and health problems, and it just starts piling up. And so I threw the script in a drawer, and I was just like, this isn't happening. And Edwin came along, and he actually asked, he was trying to apply for a job at Udon. We didn't have any positions available, and he said, I looked at his portfolio, and I said, you're making the most common mistake I see in art portfolios. You're not leaving enough room for dialogue and sound effects. And he goes, well, I said, are you working from a script? No, just making up scenes from my head. So work from a script. And he's like, oh, do you have a script? I said, well, all the scripts that I've worked on are copyrighted. I can't give them to you except this thing in a drawer. And so I pulled out the first Skull Kicker script and I sent it to him. And I said, you know, do 2-3 pages. I'll give you feedback. And he did the whole fucking issue. And I said, hey, I really want to work with this kid.
You know what? Okay, I got something.
Yeah, go.
So that's an interesting, I don't know how this works, but that's the first graphic novel I did. We pitched it with 20 pages. We're like, 20 pages, right?
No, we're
going to sell it for sure, right? And it's out of like a 140-page graphic novel, and the guy who published it was Planet Lar AIT. Did you guys know that?
Yeah.
Know. And Larry said, oh, this is cool. If you finish it, maybe I'll publish it. And I was like, fuck.
But it's from a publishing point of view.
Yeah. But then I went home from San Diego and I was still super mad. I drew 120 pages.
Nice.
And he published it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's awesome. Same thing though, right? Like, it's like, he's like, here's the opportunity. And I didn't freak out at this point.
Nope.
I was just like,
but you're going to do it. You know, sometimes I'll talk to people and I'll say, you know, some of the websites, they'll say, hey, you should do a 3-page sample for Marvel. And they're like, do a drawing of people talking and then do an action page. And you're like, look, man, if you get the job, they're going to expect you to do 20 to 22 pages a month. So when you say to people, hey, instead of doing a 3-page sample, you should do 22 pages. And they go, oh, that's a lot of work. What do you think the fucking job is?
Oh, man.
You're going to do it every month. Yeah. If you can't do it for 1 month to prove you can do it, how are you going to do it when they give you the job? It's not like suddenly you're going to go, man, I did 3 pages in a month. Next month I'll do 22. Right on. I'm your man. It's not going to happen that way, you know?
All right. Well, why don't we open it up to some crowd questions? I'm going to walk around the side of the table, and you can come up here if you want to. Anybody?
Or we'll just talk to each other.
Just to give you an idea.
Or I'll ask more questions.
I can see a couple of pros that are working. Like, yes. I recognize Andrew.
I can't bring the mic out to you, unfortunately.
Just project.
Just shout.
Did you get published in the first issue as an editor?
So the question is, if you
get
publishing, then should you go and get an editor right away?
I definitely think you should bounce your stuff off other people. Always get a fresh view of it, even if it's just trusted friends. And as I said before, it's not just about, some of it's copy editing. Double check spelling, double check grammar, double check that things are clear. One of the most powerful things you can do is show it to someone who's not a big comic reader, and if they can follow it and figure it out, you'll get a really nice point of view from someone who's not like inside baseball. Like, we are so used to shortcutting our visual cues and just sort of like, oh, that's a mess, but I know how to get through it because comics, you know. And then you give it to, if I gave it to, you know, someone, my cousin or something, who's, she's read some comics but not that into it, and she can follow it, then it's like we've broken through all those problems. A little bit of a tangent, but the guys at Valve do the same thing with their video games. They will literally sit people down who've never played a video game before, and they'll be like, here's Left 4 Dead. And then they're just like, someone's got the mouse, and they, if they can't figure out a basic interface thing, they're like, well, we're not doing it right. Because this average person should go pick it up and just go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think that's a really valuable thing to do.
I test stuff on my mom. Because my mom was like, I heard these guys all punching and stuff. She likes, like, Archie.
Nice.
So if she can read a comic, she's my...
And then she's like, why are you drawing such disgusting things, my child?
She's like, this one says the F word.
Oh, my God. My poor parents, my mother doesn't remember the name of my comic. So she'll call me up and she's all like, so how's your skull people doing? And I'm like, oh, skull people, like these little cute skeletons or something. And she remembers sort of Wayward, kind of, the cat book. I'm like, yes, the cat book. But she, you know, it's pretty amazing. She would never read a comic.
No. My mom keeps calling Hellblazer Hellboy. Hellboy guys. The Hellboy guys comic. What are you talking about?
I think our parents must live down the street from each other.
If I have dinner with my mother, she generally pitches me something.
What?
Oh, I like that. Awesome. That's awesome.
Wow, that's great.
It's usually other people's stories.
Oh, no.
I've heard it's great.
She hasn't done that
Call
yet.
That.
But she did do a pitch 3 years ago, which we've now just published it. It's coming out in stores in 6 weeks.
Wow, how'd you edit her? That would have been, editing her must have sucked.
She didn't write it.
Oh, okay.
She'd heard a story being told, and she told me the story at dinner, and I was like, that's a beautiful story, and I wiped away a tear and said, that's lovely, and she said, well, why don't you do it as a book?
Oh, God.
I'm like, oh, fuck, how many people have told me that?
But then
I thought about it, and it got under my skin, and I was like, you know what, this is a beautiful story, and we should do it as a book, but it's a children's book, and we're a comic book publisher, so I spent 3 years figuring out how we could do a good job of publishing a children's book.
Nice.
So now we do that, but thanks, Mom.
Nice.
Any other questions out there?
You guys were talking about networking earlier,
yes.
And so I'm up here.
Did you bring beer?
What's that?
Did you bring beer?
Yeah. No, I didn't. That was a drop on my part.
All right.
So
what's your question?
Anyways, I'm wanting to create a dessert book.
Okay.
I want it to read like a comic book.
Right.
So I'm just putting it out there in the universe. It's in its earliest stages. I have a blog and a...
So you're not asking a question. You're spamming.
I guess so, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I'm shaking up this opportunity.
Get out of here. Get back to DMC.
So look up dessertanthology.com.
Oh, my God.
I'm looking for someone to make it a comic book. Anyway.
You're looking to hire somebody in this room to work with you.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Wow.
Talk to this guy afterwards if he wanted to pay you to do a comic book.
Is there a prince from Nigeria? Are they coming up next? Who's on the fucking thing now? Come on.
So one of the guys that we work with is a cartoonist called Jeff Martin. And he's at our booth, at the Renegade booth, and you should talk to him for some tips on going from aspiring comic book writer and artist to a professional. He is smart. He learns quick. And his trick was he read our best-selling book, this one. If anybody has not seen it or read it, you should. It's awesome.
God, you're spamming. No, I'm
kidding. And he looked at it, and he looked at me, and he was like, I'm going to do some research. And he came back.
Oh, I like this one.
That one? Robbie Burns?
Yeah, I'll talk about this after.
Okay. And then he came back, and he pitched me Redcoats-ish, which is a humor-based book that deals with the same information that's in the War of 1812, but Canadian history, but with his take and his sense of humor and a good cartoon story.
Nice.
And he was smart, and he saw everybody else pitching to me, and he saw the look in my eyes, and he saw me doing the math.
The glazed overlook.
He went home and spent 4 hours that night doing two strips. And he told me his idea, and then he produced the strips, and that's professional, and that got my attention, and we've worked together now for 2 years, and we're doing a second book together. So that kind of smart thinking will get you a lot further than just coming to me with the new Blade Runner
nice.
Idea that you've got.
The one of the things, if I had to give a suggestion in general, is, and it sort of ties into what you're saying there, don't try, I guess I've already sworn a bunch, I'll just say more swearing. Don't trend fuck. Like, don't worry about trying to find what the most popular thing is and just staple it to another popular thing. Making your own stories is really hard, and when things aren't going well, it's that much harder to keep it going. If it's something you care about, it's something you think is really great, then do it because that's why you want to make it. If all you're doing is trying to take the next popular thing or some vague, you know, it's zombie Pokemon by way of Scott Pilgrim, you know, like it's kind of cool. but if all you're doing is just sort of taking a current thing and trying to, it won't last. You won't be able to get the energy and the inspiration to keep it going when it's hard. If you look at some of the biggest comic successes of the last 10 years, almost all of them, there was no market for them when they were pitched. The black and white zombie movie That Never Ends was a terrible book to go into the market. Why? No one's going to buy The Walking Dead, for God's sake. It's not a book that anyone would want. And yet, that's exactly why it filled a niche. It created a need because there was nothing like it out there. Bone came out in the glut of 90s darkness shit superhero comics, and it was this light, black and white, cartoony, joyous, fantastic, all ages comic, and that's why it carved out a place for itself, because it was different, and it was passionate, and it came from Jeff Smith's heart. Scott Pilgrim, the video game, romantic comedy. There's no romance in comics. There's no comedy in comics. There's none of the thing like that style that was being published in North America at that point. And so it was stuff that they cared about, and that's why it worked. And that's why it also found a place, especially now with online. You look at a comic like, what is the stick figure math comic called? XKCD. You can't pitch a stick figure fucking science comic. Millions of people read that thing, right? Because it's something that guy's passionate about, and he creates it, and there's a market for it, right? That's what's amazing about the market now. If you put it online and you care about this stuff. I remember Scott McCloud explaining to me that he did a comic story about playing chess, for God's sake, and his obsession with playing chess when he was in high school. And superhero readers are never going to buy it, but chess players will read it, and they got into it. And if you create stuff that is about your passions, the readership you get will like you and your sensibilities, and then you will be able to build. I get sword and sorcery work because I did Skull Kickers, and I love fantasy. I get more of it because hopefully it's done well, and it's built up what people expect from me, and then Samurai Jack, and then Dungeons and Dragons, or Conan, and all these other things. And they keep sending me stuff that I love because I showed them what I want to do.
I think that goes to what you were talking about earlier, too, though, is that structure underneath whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're deeply into chess, and then you pitch a chess comic, and it has a Blade Runner veneer.
Oh.
If you're deeply into chess,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's just that the part that you're passionate about will shine through.
Sure.
And then if you dress it up in some just whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, or give it a little bit of a twist, or it's like, you know. Yeah. But this is what's really, I think when you see those comics that you never see anything like it, you know. Sex Criminals is a great comic because it's what Matt and Chip wanted to talk about. They wanted to talk about weird sex relationship stuff and in a comical way, and they're honest and it's heartwarming, and they thought they would get 3 issues out of it, and then it would lose money on the 4th one and they'd get a trade. And now it's #1 New York Times bestselling graphic novel because it's heartfelt and it's true and it's something that they're passionate about. It's also really well done.
Yeah,
but
I love
this. This is what's great about that book. There was no market for that book. And that's why that book had to be made. You know what I mean?
I should have said that Jeff is also a social studies teacher before he quit to be full-time, and he loves Canadian history.
Sweet.
So it played to his strong spot.
Right. Look at Kate Beaton. She does Canadian and historical comic strips. There's no market. Oh, wait. There is a market.
There's a market.
She found a huge audience for people that like this quirky historical stuff and weird modern takes on old sensibilities, you know? And yet, you could never take that to a mainstream publisher and it would not be on their radar, you know what I mean? But that's why she did it, because it was something she cared about.
I think that's another side of it, too, is that you just have to... I think sometimes you just have to make stuff.
Oh, sure.
And if it's not just about making stuff, if you're making stuff because you want to be a writer, you should probably do something else. Like, if you're in the industry to be an artist, not because you want to make stuff,
sure.
right? Because you want to be that person that signs books.
Oh, no, yeah, the sign books.
Because there's people that do that,
well,
right?
There's people
I want to be a writer.
They know what they want is they want to autograph books.
Yeah, they don't want to write.
My obsession, well, autographing books is like a nice reward. I meet people and they say they like a book, and I'm like, this is great. And it energizes me to go home and make more fucking books.
Yeah.
But I'm not here to... I love signing books. I love meeting people. But I love telling stories. That is why I do what I do. If what you want to do is sign books, then just daydream all day and sign your name over and over again on a piece of paper, right? That's not making stories. That's
yeah.
not the hard work that's associated with it.
You could
it.
Be a YouTuber.
Yeah. yeah. You know, last year, so Justin Jordan and Charles Soule and I, we had this running competition. And it was a way... It was like marathon running where you would, you know, post up your times or you would post up your running or whatever. We would do a little thing on Twitter where we'd have a number slash another number. And the first number was how many pages you scripted today. And the second number was how many pages you scripted total this year. And it wasn't a competition. We weren't trying to beat each other. But it was just like, did you do your work today? And you're just like, it was just the thing. Most people didn't know what it was. You see these numbers pop up on our feeds. And people were like, what is this? Some military code? And we're just like, just stuff. Mm-hmm. And you didn't realize how far you were along until you were looking and you're like, okay, I'm doing it. I scripted 1,000 pages of comics in 2014.
Cool.
And it was a weird, I got around 980 and I was dying. And Charles is like, are you really just going to let that last digit go? I was like, you son of a bitch. And so I took it, you know, I literally finished the 1,000th page on December 31st, about 2 hours before my New Year's party was starting at my house. And my poor wife was getting her house ready for all these people coming over. And I'm just like, clack, 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 clack. But it was a great milestone. And it proved to me that I could push through and make stuff, you know. So.
All right, I'm going to ask, this will be our last question. I'm going to ask you, okay. What's the best way to promote your comic once it's published?
Do you want to go first?
I got nothing.
All right.
Well, a good way then.
Nice.
I don't know. We're still trying to figure it out.
Nice.
Like, we have one of the greatest artists in comic books working with us, and has done for 5 years, and still hundreds of people are coming up and saying, I've never heard of you guys, or... Didn't know John was still working in comics, so we're doing something wrong. but I don't know. I'm looking for good ideas. So
I think you know, everyone says social media, and I think that's true to a point. But you have to remember that the vast majority of communication, and this is a really broad, going to get it all zen like, is empathy. Right? Mm-hmm. Don't think about just what you want. Think about what other people want. So. If people follow my Twitter feed and I give good advice about writing and stuff and I talk about funny things or I talk about the industry and then I mention my books in and amongst that stuff, if all it was an endless spam feed of, here's a preview of my book, you should buy my book, hey, buy my book, Amazon link, let's go. You're not going to get the kind of traction because there's nothing real behind that. There's no empathy. We're not talking about my life. We're just literally an endless... You're a banner ad, and people's eyes will just roll over it. It's like, after a certain point, it's obvious, I want you to buy my book. It would be very helpful to my future career if you could purchase the things that I have created. So that is now no longer needs to be said. But what I need to do now is give you a reason to care about the work I do, to check it out, or to read it, or to recommend it to other people. So be an honest, empathetic human being, and try and put a little bit of yourself out there, and hopefully people will, you know, grow to respond to it, you know.
I do it one person at a time.
Yeah.
I don't, cons are interesting places to be and to meet people, but I find that if you take the time to get a convention and put yourself out there and relate to somebody, or draw something for somebody, or sign their book, And I just like talking about comics, so that I'm signing books, talk to people about what they're reading,
but you're giving them
whatever,
experience.
Right? And those are the people that are like my fans for life. And then when I see them again, like every year I go to Seattle,
mm-hmm.
they might buy a commission or they might not. We might just talk, but those people always buy my comics.
Right.
And that's my system. It's just one person.
Well, I think it's really valuable, and I do that at the cons too, where you meet someone and you talk to them and you want to generate an experience. And it's not like I'm trying to. It's not a formula. It's not like I look over and I go, I know what I say to that person. Like, it's not, it has to be real. Like, if someone comes over, the good thing is I write the things I'm passionate about. So if they want to talk about it, you have a hard time shutting me up, right? So you come over and you're like, oh, I love that you did Dungeons & Dragons. Hey, let's fucking tell Dungeons & Dragons stories for the next 20 minutes because I'm into it and I want you to be into it. And I'm so excited into it. Hopefully the people in the 10-foot radius are going to be like, well, that's interesting, and sort of, you know, move over as well. But it is. It's about empathy and passion, I think, is really important.
Well, yeah. And sometimes I feel like you share business stuff. And
yeah.
You know, whatever. That's, I share process sometimes, and sometimes people identify with that, and they're like, oh, I lay out a page like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's something to connect to, right? And you can talk about that, like, well, why do you use a blue pencil, or why do you digital...
Sure.
Pencil.
And I hope that it never gets to a point where I, and you can't answer every question. You can't, not everyone's going to get the same experience, you know? But on both sides of it, I think it's about empathy. If you're coming over to a professional and you don't have the interaction that you want, remember they're a real human being, right? Maybe they had a bad burrito. Maybe they just had a fight with their significant other on the phone. Maybe they've got a blinding headache because they've been doing the show for the last 3 days or something. It's not just about you. Understand that this is complicated. You know what I mean? I'll tell you a little quick anecdote. Hopefully it won't run over time. Supposed to go for dinner. This is like San Diego 2004. My friend Mark Asquith is a TV producer. He does this Canadian show called Prisoners of Gravity. You guys remember that? Oh shit, you're all young. Anyways, he would interview all these luminaries of science fiction and stuff. He knows everybody. He knows personally, like Neil Gaiman and Frank Miller and all these guys, Dave Gibbons and all that. And so he's like, oh Jim, we're going for lunch, a whole group of us. Do you want to come out? I'm like, who's coming? He just names a bunch of people and then he goes, and Grant Morrison. And I was just like, well, as I'm like, okay, yes, I want to go. Grant, he says, meet us at the CBDLF table, the Comic Book League of Defense Fund. We're going at noon. I'm like, great. We show up there. It's 5 minutes to noon, and there's a huge snaking line of people waiting to get their shit signed by Grant Morrison. And I'm like, that's not 5 minutes. And I look over, and I go, what's going on? Yeah, the line's way worse than they thought. They should have cut it off, but they forgot, and it's really fucked up. And we're like, okay, well, just cut it off. Just tell these people to fuck off. You know, like, oh, we gotta, Grant's going to have lunch. He didn't even have breakfast. And Mark's like, I'm trying. I'm like, okay. He goes and he talks to Grant and Grant's signing stuff and glad handing people. And Mark comes over and he goes, he's not coming along. I was really irritated. I was just like, I want my moment with Grant Morrison. And we go for lunch and I'm all petty and bullshit. And we sit down and Mark goes, Jim, you don't understand. And I said, I really don't. That guy needs to eat lunch. Those people need to be polite and let him go eat lunch. And he goes, that might be the only time in those people's lives that they're ever going to meet Grant Morrison, and he's like probably one of their favorite writers. And in that moment, they're going to get a first impression and decide if they like him and they support his work for the rest of their lives, or they think he's an egotistical piece of shit and they will badmouth him for life. Mm-hmm. So he always sticks around till the bitter end. And I'm like, I am completely wrong. I've learned something, and I will never take that for granted. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Jim Sepp for coming out. Check out Wayward Sculptor. I want to thank Riley Rosmo for coming out.
Hellblazer. Check
out Hellblazer. Or Hellboy. You know, whichever one.
Nice Hellboy or Hellboy.
And Alexander Finbo, you've got to go, and you've got to check these out at his table. Renegade Arts Entertainment. John Bolt is in the house. People.
What's your... Are you on the table?
I'm Brett Monroe. Thank you very much for coming out.